Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 11th, 2005. This session is Transgender 101, Questions and Answers, presented by Dottie Berry. We now join Dottie in the fireside room.
I think one of the things I'd like to start off with is just a little bit about how I even became, you know, involved with the transgender community. And I'd like to start that by just saying the transgender community for me is God's greatest gift that's ever happened in my life. It has expanded my world. The people that I've met have so expanded my thinking. Because you have to understand, if you listen to me talk, you know I'm not from here, and if anybody needs interpretation, we'll have an hour afterwards to say, what'd she say? So yes, I am from the South. I grew up in Atlanta. And then I spent 22 years in Kentucky before I met this wonderful woman and married her. Well, we were voided by Oregon, I'll have to say that much. We did get voided. The state of Oregon divorced us. I mean, can you imagine? So anyway, I moved out here, and I've just really enjoyed being out in this area of the country. But I would like to share with you how I came to know something about the transgender community and transgender people. I was, in 1999, I took a seat at the lunch counter. So obviously by being in 1999, you know that it wasn't during the civil rights. But that seat that I took at the lunch counter was one of the most important times of my life. What happened was I sat down next to a lady named Judy Osborne. We were in Lynchburg, Virginia, to say to Jerry Falwell that the spiritual violence against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons is wrong. And it's hurting our church communities, and it's hurting people. And Judy was there as a part of this group called Soul Force, where we were just there to, you know, help Jerry come to a better understanding. So we're still working with Jerry on coming to that better understanding. And we've been back many times. But I guess the question I would like for each of you to think about, too, is why should this even be important to our community? Well, first of all, if I read correctly, about what this community is about, it's about being inclusive. So how can you make a claim of being inclusive if you're leaving people behind? So my motto is leave no person behind, because the minute you do, your being inclusive has become a concept. It's become a theory. And if it's not being lived out in action, then it's not time to necessarily beat yourself up. It's just time to question, wow. Now let me think, when I go back to my church, when I go back to my community around the United States, how can I be more inclusive? My belief and my experience has been that the reason we're not as inclusive as we could be is because we have some fears around understanding of the transgender persons. So I think that's one thing that, you know, sort of gets in the way. And quite frankly, there's no stigma against being genderphobic. Okay? Now you think about this. I'll never forget it. Rodney Powell, who's a dear friend of mine, he's an African-American man who took a seat at the lunch counter, the real one during the civil rights, said to me one time, you know, Dottie, there is a stigma against being racist in our country today. But it wasn't always like that. It was okay, you know, to tell jokes, to have people sit in the back of the bus. All of those things were okay. He said, until we change it, so that there is a stigma against being homophobic, genderphobic, all of these things, people continue to tell the jokes and nobody calls us on it. We think it's okay to leave certain classes of people out of our churches. Jesus left nobody behind. Where did we ever come up with this thing about those people can't be involved yet? And so, I'll tell you what happened. For me, one night at dinner, I had a lesbian couple who were deacons in the United Methodist Church. Now, they're not even in a church that is welcoming and affirming officially yet, but they do know that they're lesbian women, and they are a couple, and they are deacons. But they said to me, now, Dottie, don't you think we should just slow down a little bit with these transgender people? I said, well, let me just ask you something. If they were the people in front, so to speak, how would you like it if they left you behind? They looked at each other and they went, Well, we just never thought about it that way. And I said, well, probably not. But that's how we all need to think about it. Let me just ask you this. We don't often ask heterosexual people to identify themselves, but if there's anybody willing to, we're not saying that you have to. We don't want to embarrass anybody. But if you would be willing to claim that you are a heterosexual, would you raise your hand? Anybody in the room? Okay. Now just look around. If the transgender community were in the position, so to speak, that you are in society, how would it feel to you if we were having a little gathering about the heterosexual people to decide if we were going to include you in our church and give you God's blessing and let you be a part of society? So again, I think that what happens lots of times is we just don't have a lot of education. It's like anything else. If you don't know math, well, you don't really sit around and say about how you don't understand math. You go and learn something. So my invitation to you is to simply be open to learning about people who are different than you. My personal belief is that the transgender community is our ticket to equality. It's our key. You might say, what in the world are you talking about now? The transgender community is the key to equality. Well, let me just give you a couple of examples. In the state of Washington, Robbie and myself cannot be married. It's against the law in the state of Washington. And yet, my two friends are married and they're two women. Well, how did that happen? Well, my wonderful friend Judy, until the age of 69, presented most of that time, I say presented as male, because Judy always knew herself to be Judy. So when you hear about gender reassignment and sexual reassignment surgery, I call it GAS, gender affirmation surgery. Because see, most of the people, if they do transition and they're transsexual, which we're going to talk a little bit about these different aspects of being transgender, they've always known themselves to be who they are. And if they were born as a female and they've always known themselves to be male, they don't change per se. They begin to identify and express in the gender that they understand themselves to be, and that's in the 5-inch part, the place between your ears, because you know what you sense of yourself and the gender. So I think when you start to look at what happened for Judy at the age of 69, Judy had been married for 25 years to her third spouse, because you know, as she came along, the first spouse knew nothing about Judy, essentially, as Judy started out on her journey identifying as a cross-dresser, okay? Because the first thing that happens if people are in one gender or the other, where they express themselves in that gender and they begin to dress as the other gender, then they're called a cross-dresser. That's part of the transgender community. But think about it. I'm cross-dressed today and nobody gives me a second look, do they? I mean, in that sense, I have on pants. But if a male dresses in a dress, that's pretty evident in our society because of presentation. So Judy essentially thought herself to be a cross-dresser. The first wife didn't know at all. The second wife did know, but when Judy then began to come to a greater understanding, no, this is really who I've been all my life, and it's more than me cross-dressing and then coming back and presenting as male. Judy began to do what was called being in her female presentation full-time. But now that didn't mean that Judy was going to have any type of operation. People don't always have an operation to be presenting in the gender that they know themselves to be. But as Judy began to come to that sense, and was with her third spouse, it brings up all kinds of things. The spouse is thinking, well, that cross-dressing was fine for me, but as these other changes start to take place through hormones and so forth, that's not what I want for my life. Now, granted, we would hope that we would all just love the person. But in some respects, if you go to the grocery store to get apples, and when you get home, you got oranges, it's not that apples are bad, but you know, you wanted oranges, and some people can't make that transition into just loving the person they're with. They still want, if you're the female wife, you still want perhaps that male person that you identify with. And that was the case for Judy and Sally. But they stayed married, you know? And part of the reason they've stayed married, because they're very good friends, is to have this model looked at to say, you know, the state of Washington says two women can't be married. And yet they are, because here's Judy and Sally. They're a married couple. Well, the state of Washington doesn't come and say, okay, y'all got a divorce now. Because, you know, Judy, you now have a driver's license that says you're a female, so we're going to change this. And so here's what happens next. Some states get really nervous. They go, okay, we'll fix this. We'll make sure that we don't care how they change themselves. We'll say, you have to be the gender that you were born as. That's how we'll get these people. Well, let me think of this. Let's say you've got a male who then transitions and does go through surgery and is a female. But they say, you have to be identified as a male. Well, fine, that male marries a woman, and now you still got two lesbians if you go by what society's standards are, isn't it? Isn't it? And you know what? That's why they're gonna create the equality. That's why the transgender community has come to save the world. So people, I'm telling you, we gotta wake up. I am serious about this. Think about the ramifications of that. It just takes it and blows it out of the water, and what it makes us do is go, but I wanted to hold on to something. Can't you give me something to wrap my hands around? I liked that box. But you see, gender and sexual orientation and all that is much more fluid than we've thought. It's an illusion, and we're disillusioned about what's going on with gender identity and sexual orientation. And now let's take it. Okay, so let's say you've got a person, and I'll just use Judy, my friend, as an example. And Judy has always been attracted to women. Always. Now, your sexual orientation, that's who you're erotically attracted to. So Judy, when she became a woman, then that made her attracted to women. In our category of categories in our society, that made her a lesbian. And her wife, Sally, said, well, but I'm not a lesbian. But I'd like to stay married because we're good friends and I support the transgender community. So you see how this begins to make you look at things? Now, here's an interesting piece. I always do what's called a spree over in Port Angeles every year. Wonderful transgender conference, and you go, in Port Angeles? Now, this is why I love kind of like defying myths, because, you know, the myth would be that Port Angeles would not be the most welcoming town in the world. And yet this transgender group going to Port Angeles has changed that community. And you know why? Because one person a long time ago did something great. Janice, thank you for starting that in Port Angeles. Give this lady a hand. She did. And I just, you know, the wildest thing is I just met her on the bus coming up. And she, I've heard her name, but didn't know that she was the one for starting a spree in this community. That has changed that community because they've come to know people. And that's the power of it. When we connect on authentic levels, the differences dissolve. That's what's exciting. So if we can quit doing this, and that's what Lars is excited about, that's what we're excited about. And that's really the power of getting to know the transgender community and letting them lead us rather than us operating under this illusion that they're the people in back of us. No, they're the people that need to be in the front because they have so much to offer with changing our concepts and our labels. Because a label, to me, is only something to use so you can get beyond the label. It's kind of weird. We almost have to bring it out to identify it so we can shatter the label and allow it to go away. But in transgender, you hear that term. How many of you have heard the term before? I mean, probably pretty familiar with it. And you hear all kinds of things about it when lots of times people say a transgender person rather than a transgendered person. You can get into all kind of discussions about semantics because they go, well, you're not called lesbian and you're not called gay. And, you know, it is what it is, you know. But again, when you look back at these labels, I'll give you an example. At Esprit, what I do is I handle what's called the SO program. And SO stands for significant other. And the reason we call it that is because sometimes spouses are there with their married partner, okay? And sometimes it's somebody they're dating, so we just want to, it's like somebody's partner. But one of the dearest couples in my group is a Mormon couple. Wonderful, wonderful couple. Been married about 30 years. 6 children, 9 grandchildren. Now you can imagine, the Mormon church is a little bit more stringent, you know, with how they look at some things like this. And her concern was, as she was talking about it, she said, well, see, here's the thing. I don't really mind that my spouse cross-dresses. She says, now 5 years ago when I came to Esprit, I didn't come out of the room the whole week. I didn't know what it was. This was my husband. I mean, we've been married all these years. I don't understand this. And now she's leading the way with the SOs. But she said, but if my spouse were to transition full-time to woman, I don't think I could deal with that. I said, well, tell me why not? She said, well, because I'm not a lesbian. I said, well, let me ask you this. While you're here this week and you're with your spouse in her female role, are you a lesbian this week? She went, well, no, but, you know, so this is where you kind of go, I said, well, I mean, if that's the identification, you know, where, you know, if you're with somebody and they're both female, then you're lesbian, then are you a lesbian for the week, you know? I mean, we'll have a show on it, lesbian for a week. How many want to sign up? I don't know. But you see how this makes you start to think? And that's the power of it, is just making us start to think a little bit about these roles and these identities and these things we've set up. And I think it is this thinking about all of it that scares people. Because, you know, if I've got this box and then I start thinking different about one thing, oh my gosh, what does that mean? Perhaps my whole foundation might need examining? Oh, and what would that mean? So, you know, it really calls us to examine on deeper levels, you know, everything that we think about, our belief systems and how they affect us or don't affect us. So in the transgender community, we usually encompass what's called cross-dressers, okay? And cross-dressers, again, if you are a male and you cross-dress into female clothes, well, that's where it comes from, okay? And every person who is a transsexual who might eventually transition totally to living in the gender expression that they know themselves to be always starts as cross-dresser, essentially, because think about it. If you're a male and you put on a dress, then essentially you've cross-dressed in that moment. Many women who are transsexual men, they begin by being often in the lesbian community because they just end up there because that's where they're comfortable, but then they realize that that's not really what it's about either. So the interesting thing is, let me use that paper just for a minute, Mars. My friend Jameson and Heidi. Jameson will be up in our area next weekend. We're doing a workshop in Bellingham on June 19th, if anybody's interested. It's The Power in All of Us. And it's about creating a greater understanding about same-gender marriage and marriage equality. But I was picking up USA Today, and right there on the front page of the money section was, that's James. Now, if you look at James, I doubt you would go, well, that person was born as a female. You wouldn't know it in a million years. Now, here's the interesting piece. James is married to Heidi. Heidi been lesbian all her life. But you know what? Heidi met James, and they fell in love, and now that makes them a happy heterosexual couple. Oh, my goodness. What? Except for they couldn't get married in Ohio, where Heidi had a big job with P&G, and stay in Ohio because the laws are different in Ohio that would prevent them from marrying. James lived in California, so they married there because the laws did accept James as a man once James fully transitioned, had the driver's license changed and all. And so Heidi, being a female, could marry James because they allow heterosexuals to marry in the state of California. Isn't that awesome? Wow. So, you know, I'm just throwing out some of these dynamics. When I went with Judy, I went to Thailand for Judy to have her gender affirmation surgery. And we were there when 9/11 hit. We weren't even in our, you know, own country. And it was very, very interesting because many couples had come from the Pacific Northwest. So there were two there. One who had surgery, let's see, the year before. Okay, so now just bear with me a minute, okay? You got two people born as men. One goes to Thailand and becomes the female they've always known themselves to be. So, when they come back, the man and the woman marry as a couple, because they can legally marry in the state of Oregon because they're happy heterosexuals. You got my picture? Okay, bear with me now. Then the other one, who is still the male, had already planned to also transition to female, but they wanted to make sure they married before the other one had their surgery, because once the other one became the woman, they couldn't marry in Oregon anymore. Isn't that interesting? You begin to see the equality that the transgender community brings to the table. And I'm not making light of it in that. I'm saying it helps us see how ridiculous it is that government and religion, I believe, how ridiculous it is that we try to define love between people, that we try to define, you know, gender. I mean, let me just ask all the heterosexual people who identify themselves. I want you to just to think in your mind for a moment. If you are a male, I want you to think for just a moment, if you had known yourself to be female all your life, just think of that. And if you are a woman, I want you to think, what if you had just known yourself to be male all of your life? What would you want to do? Would you want to be who you are? Probably so. If you can get that much understanding of what it would be like to have to stay as somebody you know yourself not to be and live that way all of your life, you can get in touch with why it might be important to allow the transgender community to be a part, an open part in the celebration of our church life, because they bring such a richness. And if you and your communities are squelching that, personally, I believe that we're squelching part of God's gift to the world. And we're missing out on it. We're missing out on their talents and their gifts. I'll have to share with you, at a spree last year, I was working out in this one area, and it was near a hot tub. And right as I got out of the hot tub, this man came up to me and he said, can I get in there real quick and get a towel? I said, sure. And he looked at me and he says, oh, it is so good to see a real woman walking around. And I looked at him and I said, really? I said, well, you know, we're all real women over here at the hotel. And he kind of looked at me because I think he thought, you know, it's kind of like the jokes you tell and everything, and that, you know, I'm saying call the stigma into account. He just kind of ran into the wrong person. And so I said, oh, we're all real women over there. And he looked at me and he said, And I said, well, I'm one of the presenters over there. And I said, you know, I said just what I said to you in the beginning. I said, the transgender people I know are God's greatest gift to me. And he looks at me and he says, in 100 words or less, why? I said, because every day that I am with transgender people, I'm reminded of how much we have in common rather than how different we are. And I said, that didn't take 100 words, did it? And he just kind of looked at me and he said, well, are some of y'all going to be over there, you know, at the hotel later? I said, yeah. So we've got a dinner and a dance, but we'll be over there. I said, why don't you drop by? I said, if you do, you'll run into the top structural engineer in the world over there. You'll run into one of the most, an internationally renowned sculptor who's getting a big award this year. You're running, you know what I'm saying? Without identifying them specifically, I just tried to share some gifts that this, the transgender people were already bringing and what you might be missing out on. So, you know, those are the kind of things that I think we have to continue, you know, sort of to look at as we look at the transgender community. And so, again, you have your cross-dressers, and you have what a lot of people hear the term transvestite. How many have heard of the term transvestite? Okay. The way we usually sort of give a distinction between transvestite is every transvestite is a cross-dresser, but every cross-dresser is not necessarily a transvestite. And why is that so? Mostly, a transvestite more means that the expression that comes out of the cross-dressing is more for erotic purposes, whereas a cross-dresser per se is not necessarily for that reason. It's just a part of who they are, another side of their expression. Then transsexual. You have what's called a trans man or a trans woman. And again, please, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with labels, so just know that when I'm even saying the labels, I hate them, move beyond them. But for just the purposes of a greater understanding, a person who is a male and transitions and lives full time as a female sometimes is referred to as a trans woman, okay? And then a woman who transitions full time to a male then might be called a trans man. That's just some of the terms you might hear. A person who is whose gender expression is being experienced every day, not necessarily has surgery. So just as a little clue to help you, when you meet somebody, one of the last questions you ever want to ask them is, well, have you had your surgery yet? Thank you. And you know, I say that because you don't know. Hey, you know, you don't know in the beginning. Because our assumption is if you're living full-time as this person now, that you've had some kind of surgery. It's not necessarily true. And here's some reasons behind that. First of all, that's not essentially what makes a man or woman in their experience. Now, I know that when the baby comes out, when they're born, they go, is it a boy or is it a girl? And y'all, quite frankly, if we each in here had to take a chromosome test, about 5% of us, 10% might end up in the true XXXY. There's so many variations that if that was what was going to be the barometer, all of us would be going, what is a man? What is a woman? That's a whole nother lecture. By the time we get through, you're not sure you know which is which. You know, because is it by genitals? Is it by expression? Is it, what is it by? So, you know, as people then, you know, begin to express the surgeries, if somebody wants to have surgery, they're anywhere from, oh, $20,000, $25,000 maybe for if you're a male transitioning to female. You can spend upwards of $75,000 if you're a female and you want to have surgery being a male. Depends on what you have done and all. But the thing is a lot of people don't have that kind of money. And then, you know, the battles that are going on with insurance. You know, people, they say, well, we're not going to give people money for this thing they're choosing. But choosing, think about it. It's not like I went to the store and I said, I think I want to be something different today. Ha, 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 let me do that, and you should have to pay for it. I mean, this is something that people have known themselves to be all their lives. Shouldn't we support people in that rather than looking at something that's... And, there's not enough people that fall into that category to crash our system, and make it go broke. There's a lot of other things that we should be concerned about, in my opinion, that are making it go broke, such as greed and corporate theft and, let's not blame it on the transgender community. Let's look at where it might really be happening. So these are some of the reasons that people might not be able to, have an operation of that nature, nor may they not want it. So, that's just kind of a broad spectrum. We just kind of wanted to give you an idea of, I did personally, about how important the transgender community is to our community of faith, our community of society. Just a little bit about the variations, but I'd like to really now leave the rest of the time to do just Q&A, but I felt like I really wanted to give some background as to how I was just gifted by wonderful, wonderful people. I just can't even, when Robbie and I got married, the greatest thing was there were about 120 people there. After we had our there's marriage does have two parts in our country. I just can't pass up this opportunity to tell you about that because most people think it's one altogether. But there's a civil marriage and there's a spiritual ceremony. And people aren't fighting for the right to force churches to do anything. That's what's great about separation of church and state. What we really wanted is that civil right. And then once you have a civil right, nobody can force you to go have a spiritual ceremony. Likewise, if you have a spiritual ceremony and you never get a license, you might say, well, I want all the benefits that the government gives. The government goes, well, you can't have it just because you had a spiritual ceremony. You have to get a license over here, and then you can inherit things, and you can get tax benefits, and all those kind of things. So, all to say that when Robbie and I got married and we had 120 people there, we didn't have our parents there. My father's dead, but our families wouldn't come, just four cousins, and we were really grateful they did. But what we did have was the greatest mix of people. We had people with their children there, we had transgender people, and they asked us, do you want a head table and people sit? I said, oh heavens no. I said, I want everybody just to mix it up, and I want our state legislator that came here, and Dave Paul, I want him to sit next to transgender people and all, just mix it up. So that's what was great. It was really an exciting day. But so, I just kind of want to give you a chance to ask questions that you might have about the transgender community and, if you have fears or beliefs or whatever, throw it out there and I'll do my best to answer. And if I don't know the answer, I'll certainly tell you and I'll pass it to Janice. Anybody? Yes.
Yeah, it seems to me that, I'm going to speak from the perspective of the ELCA, but that the ELCA's attempts to, or any denomination's attempts to try and define who can be clergy, who can be pastors, who can be married or blessed, that the logic that's behind that is so far behind the knowledge that's out there regarding gender, that all this energy is being spent to get up to date, but getting up to date is 15 years behind what's up to date. Mm-hmm. And so all this battle that's happening is really for naught because it doesn't even deal with the reality of the whole situation. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, I think anytime you have hierarchies in place, I call it the reason people try to keep people separated is because it's easy to hurt and control people as long as they're separated. You think about it. If as a kid you ever had a good friend and you told one friend something and you told the other friend something else, the last thing you ever want is for those two friends to get together. Because you know what? The truth is going to be found out. So I think that's why hierarchies try to keep people separated, try to keep them arguing with one another. Because, you know, once we really come together and we sit down and we talk, and again, that's part of mine and Robbie's journey, is to go out and to be with people. Because we know in our community we can't keep preaching to the choir. Because, you know, people on both ends want to just preach to the choir. And nothing's changing, nothing's shifting. So we have to dare to get among people who disagree with us. The reason we don't like that, I believe, and I can only share from you what my experience is because we're attached to a specific outcome. We hardly can do anything in our lives where we don't have a specific outcome already decided. The problem with that is, when you're attached to a specific outcome, then it's easy to go to disappointment. And when you're in disappointment, you're in fear. The only way you can come from that place of love like Jesus did is to not be attached to a specific outcome. And most people do not want to live their life that way. They go, no, I'm going on a journey, but I want to know exactly where the journey is minute by minute. So wouldn't you like to just experience it and be present? Nope, tell me where the path is going. You know. So this is what I think is behind that. They want to know, what is here at the end? I'm not even going to go there until I can control it. And then the opportunity for being present to God's wonderful witnessing is lost. I mean, that was what was so powerful, I think, about Jesus, is the radical love of Jesus for people. I love it when I wear my cross and people start talking to me about it. I say, yeah, don't you love it? Jesus was a radical. They go, it's like, how fast can I get away? But I think that really is the power of Jesus. And Jesus was just being present with people and welcoming people and including people. And we know what happened. People say, well, why do you think Jesus went to the cross? I said, because he wouldn't shut up. why do you think he went to the cross? I said, so, you know, if you won't shut up, we'll kill you. I said, Jesus could have saved himself. Jesus could have denied. You know, how many times do we deny the existence and the inclusion of other people so that we can keep what we've got? Mm-hmm. Again, those of you who are driving at the front of the cart right now, you know, that doesn't make you bad. But I think it's time for the people who are driving at the front of the cart to show some real leadership and share power. Why do we get afraid of sharing power? Because often we're afraid that when we share power that they'll do to us what we've done to them. Mm-hmm. We don't trust that they might do it different. So we hoard it. You know, we keep it to ourselves. And I think that's a lot of the fear that's in the churches right now about being welcoming to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons. And queer and questioning and intersex. And, you know, there's so many aspects of the spectrum of who we are.
Could you explain what?
Pardon?
Queer used to be a derogatory remark.
And, yeah, I
and it, I worked yeah. with a gay man here, and I asked him, I said, why do you refer to that all the time? Because it seemed like such a derogatory term.
Yeah.
But he said, well, if we use it, then it takes all the power out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now is it used to describe somebody?
You know, it is, and again, you know, you see things shifting all the time, but words really only have the power that we give to them. You know, quite frankly, right now, if I say the word fuck, I mean, excuse me, I'm just going to say it. If I say that word has attachments for some people to something. You use it in one context, it might be a very loving word in one context in the right part with a partner. So it might mean something else. And somebody says, blank you in anger. So words only, I just bring that one up because that's an energy power one, you know. But it only has the energy that we ascribe to it. And used to be, you know, the word queer. People were trying to do a put-down by saying, are you queer? Queer, you know, and the body language was a put-down. Queer today is often used to be an encompassing word for gender expression, sexual orientation expression. And so rather than having like gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, which means, you know, the bisexuals got added on after the gay and lesbian, and then the transgender, and it kind of makes it hierarchical type of thing. So queer tries to be more encompassing, and then even, you know, heterosexual people can all be part of queer too, because if queer represents gender expression and gender identity and sexual orientation, then that includes everybody. And then there's no, this one came before that one, and then now you see people going LGBT, and you know, even my website is glbtcoach.com. You know, but it becomes, you know, a process is what I'm saying. And what is, you know, what energy and power are we giving to the words? So I think it's learning as we continue to go along. What other questions might anybody have about?
Early on in your presentation, you brought forth the aspect of equality.
Of what?
Equality.
Uh-huh. Equality?
I think this is something that we have to take to ourselves, that we realize equality to all persons.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you're right. I think, and that's, to me, that's what it's really about. You know, it's about understanding how this fits into the picture of equality. Again, I love when I see a church that says love welcomes all. Oh, that's always an opportunity. I call them up, and then at the end of 30 minutes, I find out that they didn't really mean me. And so I say to them, I said, have the courage to say, we welcome all in our church except gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, unless you change. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so yeah, we welcome as long as you are who we want you to be. Well, in the end result, they realize, wow, we're not quite welcoming at all. In fact, one of the things we'll do next Saturday in Bellingham is we have a ministers-only gathering. Our panel that's speaking on Sunday for this workshop and panel that I told you about, we've gotten together some ministers. And the minister who we got to issue the letter of invitation to other ministers was the rebuttal person last year on a panel at Western Washington. And he was the rebuttal person against same-gender marriage equality. And we've been having lunches with him for a year. And he just looked at us and he went to me and Robbie, he said, I gotta tell you, I've shifted because I can't deny the love between you two. And I don't know if I'm as far as agreeing with marriage for same gender couples, but I am in favor of civil unions and holy unions. And that's a huge shift for him when you were the rebuttal person just back last May. But what it gets to be is by being with us, he begins to see it's just about equality. He had to experience seeing what happened when we were voided by the state of Oregon. And we had, you know, we had to deal with that. And we, you know, they did an article, because they did an article when we first married. And they said, give us some feedback. And we went, well, yeah, we're disappointed. But you know what? Our love and commitment are intact. And a piece of paper can't give us that, and a piece of paper can't take it away. And when you talk in terms of love and commitment, then you have something that feels the same to other people. Mm-hmm. And this is how, you know, you encompass it to be equality and have people start to think. I mean, I don't even share this information with you to change your thinking on it a bit. I mean, if a seed is planted that makes you ask yourself deeper questions, isn't that what faith and spiritual beingness is about, is to have us wrestle and question and go deeper with the relationship with God so that we can have a greater understanding about compassion and the worth of human beings in our world. I would say that's a good thing if you start on that journey. If you just plant a little seed today to go back and start conversations in your churches. We'll be coming around the country for a year. Call us. Yeah.
Are there church bodies or other faith communities that you think are doing particularly well on transgender inclusion? I think I'm aware of most of them that are not.
I hate to tell you, I don't think there's anybody doing a good job, really. HRC is just beginning to do a better job. Our gay and lesbian community needs educating so bad. Even on our journey, Robbie and I feel like we're kind of in a unique position. She's learned and come to know the transgender community so much because of, you know, them being around us a lot. So I feel like as much as we're going to work with people who are wrestling with their understanding about gay and lesbian people, we're there for gay and lesbian people. Because I say, you know, if you don't come to a better understanding about transgender community, how can you complain that the heterosexual community at large is not welcoming you? That's why I was just saying to these two lesbian people at dinner, it's okay to leave people behind. Don't move too fast. Our motto on our website for this journey is leave no person behind. I'm not okay to leave anybody behind. And I, you know, I look very much like a lot of the people that I'll be talking to. And you know, I'm just grateful for that gift, that I can feel similar enough to them to have an opening to be heard and to share stories with. You know, so we're going to use the fact that we look a lot like the people we meet with.
I've been an advocate for quite some time, but I find that it's such a brick wall on people. And what I believe I hear is that it's all to do with the sex act. You know, the orientation part people can accept.
Sure.
But they think that that's done all day long. That's all everyone does. You know? And I just, it's really hard to explain.
Yeah. We kind of laugh. We go, frankly, we'd be dead if we were doing that as much as everybody thinks, you know. And here's what minister after minister has told me. And this is how much of the religious community began to shift and couch it. So it used to be they just said, you can't be this way. They didn't even talk about transgender. They were just talking about gay and lesbian. You can't be this way. Then they started to say, okay, you are this way. And you were born this way. Well, folks, we don't know that. We don't know any of that. And I hope we never figure it out because it'll just be used to abuse people. I go, let's get beyond that. What does it matter? Discrimination is discrimination. Who cares how it happens? I mean, that's another whole topic. But now what they say is, we're going to acknowledge that you are gay. But participating in your gayness is the sin. So they came up with this love the sinner, hate the sin. So they said, you must be celibate. So I have issued a challenge. How many of you are ministers in here? Okay, here's my challenge to all you ministers. I'll do it when you do it. I'll be celibate when you're celibate. I've had no takers yet. I told Bill Hybels at Willow Creek. I said, well, Bill, yeah. I mean, how fair is that? Again, so you can control? So this is, you know, part of it that we're coming up against. But we've got to get beyond the conversation of the sexual act. But in our country, we're so scared about talking about sexuality anyway that it becomes perverted in its form of discussions. Not that sex is perverted, but the discussion of how we discuss it becomes perverted. And because it's been so pushed down, many of our ways we end up acting can be perverted in ways. Think about it, if you're a gay or lesbian person, you're not allowed growing up to have the normal dating experiences that other people do. Sometimes you make bad decisions. That doesn't make them right. That means we need to allow people the opportunity to experience their own orientation and then, you know, allow them to make better decisions. So we should be encouraging marriage. Whereas, you know, Oregon divorced us. Think about this. If you were a heterosexual couple and you've been married for 30 years and every day of your life you had to lie about who your partner is and act like they were your buddy and your friend, you tell me that you could make a positive marriage out of that. The fact that our community does is a tribute. And I will tell you this, I'm gonna get your question in just a minute, I just wanna bring this point about the transgender community too. Every couple, if they had to see what transgender couples go through, we'd have a lot more marriages making it. I'll tell you what, I sat in my group just several weeks ago, had six couples. One was married 37 years, one 32, 28 years, 26 years, 24 years, and 22 years. And I'm telling you, when you're dealing with this, if you don't learn to communicate, you don't stay together. And a lot of our couples could use communication skills. So I think that the transgender couples are real models. They're a model for me. They inspire me, the things they get through. Because when they get through at the end of the day, lots of times what they get through to is just the connection of human to human. Mm-hmm. They get past the label of, am I a lesbian because I was a woman and my partner transitioned fully and now they're a woman, and they get beyond that. They get beyond that. And your question?
Well, I think that the whole conversation around transgender identity does shift the conversation from sex, which
people... I have a little bit of a hearing problem, so I'm going to have to get through here so I can hear yours.
I think the conversation around transgender identity shifts the conversation from sex to the complexity of gender in a way that kind of gets us away from the fear that you're responding to. But more deeply, within this conversation, I work in a Methodist church with children and youth, and transgender identity is not something that other people have a fear of. It's that we, in a progressive, reconciling congregation, stumble around in and mess up all the time. I think of the subtle ways that we reinforce for our children binary gender differentiation. Our kids walk in and they have a choice to go to the girls' bathroom or the boys' bathroom. Mm-hmm. Our kids walk in and we try to use inclusive language with God. And that inclusive language is gender differentiated in a male and a female. And so there are so many subtle ways that theologically we reinforce this, that where do we begin with children? And not that you necessarily have to answer that question.
Where would you like to begin?
I think the fluidity is the place that we begin. Mm-hmm. And allowing children to wonder and experience the fluidity of who we all are, be straight, gay, lesbian, transgender, wherever we find ourselves at that particular moment. But there's a risk in that that is that all of us, wherever we are on these spectrums, are necessarily stumbling around.
I think your suggestion is like this. And see, this has not been attached to the outcome, which is so hard for us to do, but just let the conversation begin. You know, what is it that we're afraid of if the conversation begins? And we want to have a specific way we want it to look. I mean, I think one of the things that I encourage is for the GLBT community to begin speaking out. Because what we've done for so long is we've just prayed that everybody would one day love us and accept us. Well, you know, you can't demand that. You can only command it by the way you live your life. And the more we allow people to know us, the more we have authentic connections. And the more we have authentic connections, the more we dissolve differences. I mean, I don't think anybody would have ever gone to Rosa Parks and said, Rosa, my friend, you know, we've been seeing you just like, you know, it really wasn't the back of the bus. You do know that. I mean, she was sitting, there was a back of the bus, but what happened was Rosa was sitting at the front of the back of the bus. And it had gotten to the point where one more white person needed a seat. So they wanted her to move on back. And she said no. Nobody probably was ever going to go back and say, Rosa, we've been noticing you sitting back here. Would you just come on up here to the front row? No. I mean, I wish it were different. But things change faster when we simply begin to claim our own freedom. And Robbie and I, our experience has been that the more we present our own healed selves to people, the more they respond back to that. And what we've essentially done in our families is because, you know, we come, you know, from traditional Christian families. My brother and sister are Southern Baptists, and, you know, they're in their own journey with that. And so what that has provided for us, though, is a mirror. That has helped me to understand who I am not, so that I could awaken to who I am in the Spirit of God and have the most connected relationship in that way. Otherwise, you know, my fear is not about being who I am. My fear would be about never becoming who I am and being somebody I'm not.
That's helpful, because I've been having some struggles with the dissolving differences language. Because I think building community around sameness is comparably, it's easier. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that part of the diversity of God's creation is saying, you're different and I love you.
Absolutely.
So, I'm having trouble with the dissolving
The differences
difference.
That I'm talking about are the differences that try to keep us separated. So the dissolving of perhaps the accepting of the differences, you know? I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because we're, you know, that diversity is what is the strength. But it's like that allows us to find the commonalities in those differences, and that's the aspect of the dissolving of that, so that we can just connect in common ways without saying, you're different. I mean, think about it. If we could only get in a room with people who think just like us, we'd have a party of one all the time. And I don't think that's very exciting, at least not to me, you know? And I think what's happening in our churches is many gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, they want to try, in the end result, if they were brought up in Christian homes, they often struggle with it, and then they start learning all they can about the Bible. But what we do is just as hurtful sometimes as what everybody else has been doing to us. We use it, both groups use it as spiritual 2x4s. And they just wham, wham, I know this, you know that. And then they beat each other to death. I've never seen two dead people communicate, have you? So I'm like, don't use it as spiritual 2x4s. If you're, I mean, for me, if I'm learning about my connection to God and my okayness with God, I want to do that for my own spiritual connection, not so I can prove to you how right I am about being gay. I mean, you can use the Bible to say anything you want. That's why it's such a fascinating book and people keep reading it. Yeah, because, I mean, you can take any number of things and people will prove their point. This is what the Bible says. I mean, just let people have, you know, but why do we have to then pelt one another with this information and create, you know, bigger differences and wider gaps? Again, we use it and we just keep pushing each other away. And what we want to do is try to transcend those differences, you know.
But the loud voices like Dobson and Falwell and Robertson,
yes,
they all interpret the Bible very literally.
Absolutely.
And I think that it does a very harmful thing. I don't know how you can even live with that kind of way, because it wouldn't make sense to modern living.
Uh-huh.
If you just everything so literally.
Yeah.
And then once in a while they'll change so that you use a little coded uh-huh. message in there to justify a stand.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the evangelical and maybe the Baptist church has been the loudest voices.
Yeah.
And against gays and lesbians yeah. and transgender.
Yeah, I think what happens is, and this is what Lars and Robbie and I have talked a lot about, because we essentially, we were working against the polarization, because as much as one side looks at the other side as the ones who are so entrenched in their thinking, there's the sides on both sides that do essentially, you know, the same thing. And so we have to figure out how to bridge the divide, how to cross the abyss, you know, into it. And with Falwell and different ones like that, Robbie and I recently, we went into Focus on the Family. What time have we got here?
5:45.
What?
5:45. 4:45.
4:45,
thank you.
What'd you say?
It's quarter till.
Quarter till, thank you. But we did go into Focus on the Family recently, Robbie and I did, because when we were there with Soul Force, they shut down. Their fear, they shut down. So we stayed over and caught a later plane. And so, because Soul Force wasn't there, when we went in, we were greeted and they were so excited that we were their guests that day. And
until they found out who we were.
and you know, it was really interesting. And so, but we ended up having unbelievable conversations with these people. But the first thing we did was we honored them and respected them before we really.
What were these people, did you say?
Pardon me?
You said Focus on
the Family. Focus on the Family, James Dobson.
But what people, is it a group of people that you saw?
Well, I mean, they have a huge campus out there.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's huge, you know, very, very big. And they have hundreds of people. They send mail out to 40,000 a month.
They have their own zip code.
They have their own zip code. So their fear kept them from us just going in. As I talked with one person, I said, you know, all we were trying to do with Soul Force was to come in here and just talk with you like this. And one of the guys said, well, we were afraid there might be violence. And I said, well, you know, you can go back and you can check anything Soul Force has ever done. You can check with every police department. You could have found out that there's never been any violence. But, you know, again, this is how people have been told myths. And when we went in there, then we sort of defied their myth. And we shared with them that we were married, and we told Melissa, who's their gender specialist, she wasn't there, she was getting ready for a Love One Out conference in Seattle. But we said to the person, we said to her assistant, we said, please tell Melissa how happy we are for her, that she's happy with who she is, and how much we honor and we respect her. Because what they get all the time is people screaming at them like, oh, they're crazy. They got her to say she's heterosexual now. And she could have been, let her be who she wants to be. And Robbie and I said, but we're happy being who we are. And when you continue to talk about options that you said in the newspaper, we're an option. We're a happy monogamous couple. So why not present all the options then? But the real thing is not the people on either end, is that many people in America are in the middle, and they just don't have knowledge, and they're struggling with their understanding. They're good, open people. You know, there's like the people who are the informable. There's the people who are the uninformable. If you've drawn really rigid distinctions, then at that point, you've chosen to be uninformable. I can't change that for you, but we will still avail ourselves to them. But then you've got the people who are the informable, who want to learn but may be struggling. That is the bigger group of people in our country. And it can cross all the political lines, and it can cross all the denominational lines. And if we just, you know, work at it from that angle and gather together to have more authentic connections, then we'll get beyond all of this. There's our hope, I believe. Yeah.
I wanted to respond to something you said. You said that how harmful it is, you know, some of the more fundamentalist approaches, Dobson and the Baptists and stuff. But just as harmful are people who get it, who are in roles of power, like within the ELCA, and who understand that this is wrong to be keeping GLBT people out, but continue to support policies that do that. Mm-hmm. And that is probably as damaging for people who are personally supportive, but then do not take that step within the institutions to change the rules and regulations of the institutions for all sorts of fearful reasons.
I think that's a very good point, yeah.
They're afraid of splits.
Yeah.
Well, they're split already.
But again, you know, a lot of people are comfortable being supportive as a closeted support person. It's a lot different to speak out, to stand up and to speak out about this. And so that what you just said is something I've said to different ministers. For instance, when all these ministers will say, but you don't understand, we don't preach any sermons about gay people being bad. And I go, well, and they say, we're not like Fred Phelps. I go, oh, yes, you are. And so, no, we haven't been screaming obscenities about gay. We don't do that. I say, you know what? What's your bottom line? Your bottom line is that we can't be ministers in your churches. We can't be members if we say who we are. You keep us in line by keeping us silent. I said, your bottom line is the same as Fred Phelps. Quite frankly, I have more respect for Fred Phelps because he at least admits it. You don't have the courage to admit your own discrimination. You've got a nice little funky sign up here saying welcome, and you don't even mean it, and you're hiding behind the cross. What's that about? It's time we start really, you know, getting the deeper levels of conversation and not allowing people to get away with saying they're welcoming and they're supportive when it's not that way at all. And they're pointing at people over there going, I'm not like them. I'm not like them. I'm not like them. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Your bottom line is the same. You just, you know, Fred Phelps looks bad in terms of society with the way he presents it, and you look pretty. But your bottom line's the same. Yeah.
When we started, you were talking about how the transgender community is a gift, and, uh-huh. and I kind of listen to that and think about, here's this community that's doing a new thing. It's not waiting for the laws to catch up or waiting for the society to accept. It's doing a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, it's just really energizing. And then part of this conversation is about the energy that goes into trying to change the existing structure to make more space
mm-hmm.
and how those fit together and all these different organizations taking different places on the spectrum of how participating. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I guess, you know, one of the things that helped me understand it better than anything is when we were sitting in Washington, D.C. in handcuffs on the bus for getting arrested at the Catholic Bishops Conference. And Rodney Powell, who was a young man who took a seat at the lunch counter, was sitting there and he gave an African-American bus driver a history lesson for an hour and a half. And I was just spellbound, you know. But what was amazing to me about it is when Rodney and I were talking later and he said, Dottie, do you really think that everybody supported us back then? He said, we had people going, you're moving too fast. African-American people, you're moving too fast. I've got me a good job and I don't mess with it, you know. White ministers who were afraid to stand up because it might cost them contributions in their churches, you know. What has more power than anything? Money. And you don't want to lose, you're well respected in the community. You got a big church. You got people who look up to you. You got your identity. But I say, at what price freedom? You know, what are you willing to be spurred to? How many are really willing to walk as Jesus? We talk about Jesus. How many of us are willing to do Jesus? But to me, Jesus was the model for saying, if I can do this, so can you. And here's how you do it. Every time I think about when I've lost something, I go back and I think about what Jesus lost. Jesus had people betray him. Time and again. So, Jesus just continued loving, regardless. How many of us are capable of doing that? I think all of us are capable of it. The question is, what do we choose? Do we choose to be safe in our life? And a lot of these questions are surrounded in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and this wonderful transgender people that create a new way of thinking for us.
You know, as much as I agree with everything you say, I was thinking of a pastor between a rock and a hard place. What you're saying is they should take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
But in our church, we live in Austin, Minnesota, where the Hormel Company was.
And where what?
Where the Hormel Company is.
Uh-huh.
And there was a strike. And there were both union people and corporate people that are members in our church.
Mm-hmm.
And then the union people came in talking with the pastors saying, take a stand. In other words, they want them to be on their side.
Yeah.
And that's a hard spot to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with any kind of controversial issue.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do, but I mean, they would have to be willing to probably lose their job or something like that.
Yeah, and I think this is what's hard, and this is why I say the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community must lead the way. How can I ask a minister to do something that I'm unwilling to do? And you know what? I'd be the first to say, and I get a lot of flack in our community for this, because see, in our community, we go, they're just on their journey. You know, we must leave them to tell their lives if they do want to. Well, the problem with that is, then everybody sits around moaning and groaning about why the laws don't change. And I say, but you know, what are you willing to risk? You want, you know, legislators to risk, you want your ministers to risk, losing their job, losing their congregations, and you're not willing to risk. So it's going to take all of us, I think. That's why I say the power in all of us. And I think, you know, the key for me is like Helen Keller said, is I'm one. I may be only one, but I must do something with that one that I am. And that's all I can do. I can plant seeds. I don't think God asked me to harvest. But God said, you can plant a seed. You go forth and do it. and let other people be responsible. Again, what we do often, I think, is we get attached to a specific outcome. If I'm going to put myself out there, by George, they better agree with me. You got to get beyond that. You got to get beyond people agreeing with you or thinking that what you're doing is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Yeah.
I'm really glad that you say that you need to be the leader, but I think our heterosexual community also need to be the leaders, because the GLBT community are not having problems with homophobia.
Yeah.
We've got to attack the homophobia. So you need to lead where you can lead, and we need to lead where we can lead.
Yes, absolutely.
We have to stand up as allies. Right. And I think any ally that can think of that, just think a little bit about that, that we're the only ones that can break down homophobia.
Yeah.
Because
everybody just need, if they'll just do their part, that's the point. But I don't want our community to sit and just hope that one day somebody will think we're okay. Because you know what? When it gets to that point and they finally go, boom, you are okay, then we'll have to deal with our own internal homophobia and genderphobia. You know, it'll be exposed then for us to deal with. Yeah.
One of our sacred boxes is about to happen. The dinner bell is going to ring.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not a sit-down meal this time. Is it a buffet? It's a burrito bar, so you can just kind of walk out as you want. There's going to be a 10-minute line there anyway, so...
Yeah, and you know, so anything that anybody would like... One of the things I really enjoy doing, I wish we had time for, is... We break down in small groups like of seven or something like that, and the question I ask, but maybe you can just take it with you. The question I ask is, if you could get beyond your beliefs or your fears about gender identity and sexual orientation, what would be the benefits for your community and for our society? And we go around in a circle and everybody gives what a benefit could be. I did this with the SOs at the transgender. I asked all these spouses married for those 30-something years, if you could get beyond the gender identity with your partner, what would be the benefit? And they were going, well, I could just love them, and I could just, we'd go around three times, they got so many benefits. And I go, well, you know, I guess it's what you want to choose then, huh? And then so then you go, and how would that affect you if you could do that? And how would that affect others if you could do that? So even if you took that, those questions and took back to your communities and started a little circle in your church or wherever you're at, in your reading club, in, you know, your sewing circle, your golf club, anywhere, ask those questions and see what people come up with, and you'll find that you already have the answers. That's the exciting part. People already know what they need to do. They just want to have the courage to do it. Yes?
I've been listening to you talk about meeting with ministers and meeting with, you know, fundamentalists and mainline ministers and putting yourselves, you and Robbie, in positions that for me would feel sort of hostile.
Uh-huh.
And I commend you for that, but I wonder if you could say a little bit about self-care. How do you carry that with you? You know, how do you handle that?
Well, you know, it's been through a lot of nonviolent process work and teaching that and sharing that and spending time with it. I think it is a process, but one thing we have found is, I think each of us just can also use the gifts that we've got, and that's one of the gifts that Robbie and I feel like we've got to go in and talk with people. But I think the more we continue to heal our own self, that's what gives you the courage and the boldness to do it. And working on not having an expectation to a specific outcome. I know that sounds like, but working along those lines, because, you know, if you don't have that, then you don't get disappointed. And if you do feel the disappointment, you're able to let it go after a short while. You just recognize it's not that you deny your feelings, you know. I mean, we've had to deal just in the last few weeks. We went to a wedding, the first wedding in the family since we got married, and nobody came, you know, hardly, of the family. And we went to Angela's wedding, and nobody knows her And Robbie was the golden girl, and they didn't come, and they went to Angela's, and nobody even knew her, but there they all sat. And it was really emotional for Robbie. So before we went in the reception, we wanted to go in God's spirit with love. Because our vow at our wedding was, we vow to change the world through the expression of our love. And that's, you know, what we try to do every day. And that intention really sets some things. So my feedback, I guess, would be find opportunities to do that in your life every day so that you build a foundational level, so that when you get to that point, you'll be prepared. Let me give you an example of how this works. The week after we got married, Robbie started noticing everybody acting kind of odd in the neighborhood. We had only moved there a month before. Some of the people we invited onto our wedding. And anyway, what happened was one of the developers called and said, people are saying there's too much gay activity. We kind of chuckled. I recognized it for what it was. I said, oh, they need some love, don't they? Oh, God, I love these situations. So I got roses the next morning, and I went around to all the homes, invited them to dinner that next Sunday night. And, you know, they didn't know why I was coming to their door. They knew who they were, but I had the roses, and it was so much fun. I took a whole half day off from what I was doing, and then I didn't get any yeses, so I decided, well, I guess I better get more specific. So I did me a little invitation up, went back the next morning, went around to all the homes and invited them, and they ended up coming. I mean, now they jump over the fence, and we had another dinner in the neighborhood last weekend. And the guy behind who was on, he said, I just love talking to you. He says, we've always had some interesting conversations and all. And this was one of the guys who just had the fears. So let me just say this. When you get triggered, it is never about the other person. So, I don't know how many of you want to look at that, but when you get triggered, it is never about the other person. They've just presented you with an opportunity gift. That opportunity gift is to use it as a healing moment, to say, wow, there's something inside of me that needs healing. Let me see how I can go about that. So then, as you do that, you take that, and you then are able to give those love gifts around your neighborhood and around everywhere. You'll be amazing, but start small. Just start small and acknowledge that when somebody comes from fear, it's they're asking for love, but they don't know how to say it that way. So you just know that when you see fear, it's a plea for love, and that can help you switch. Yeah, Janice.
I just like to say a little something. This was one of the most probably intelligent and affirming type presentations I've heard on the subject of transgender, or the T word. My own transition was in 1992, and that was before there was a whole lot of this kind of sharing. And I remember when I, just one example, because one of the things that struck me during the whole talk is stumbling over labels, you know, how. There weren't very many people who raised their hand very affirmatively when she asked about who's a heterosexual in this room. So a lot of you are not sure. That's okay. Sure. Kinsey only identified 10% homosexual, but he only identified 10% as heterosexual too. The rest of them are all 80% in the middle someplace. But I just want to address one thing that from my experience, I ran for the Seattle School Board in 1997, and I won the primary. So, and I'm pretty out. I've been out all the time. So everybody knew my story, and so I got to the second level, and there were these five editors from the Seattle PI, because they do the editor evaluation of you. And they're asking questions about budget. I am the incumbent. They're asking questions about budget and about, you know, building programs and stuff like that. And there's this one editor, they call him Mr. Magoo, but he's a senior editor, and he's sitting there, and he's busting in his chair. Janice, I've just got to ask you. Doesn't this thing about your one of his problems with the labels is he wanted to say the right thing, but he Yeah. I gotta ask you about the sex thing. That's the best he could do. This is an editor who makes his living off of words, and he can't find the words. Yeah. And he says, you know, isn't this a stumbling block? Isn't this a this is an issue in your campaign?